Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number, and by Bisquick Heart Smart Pancake and Baking Mix. With 0 grams trans fat and no cholesterol, Bisquick Heart Smart Pancakes are a delicious way to be good to your heart. Bisquick, real pancakes, real good. Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been a beautiful summer. It's been a little dry, but the vegetables have been coming on strong, and the tomatoes are coming in, big brown grocery bags full of tomatoes, people trying to give them away to each other. If you want zucchini, just go to church on Sunday. You'll have all you can handle. So rare to us, you know, back in April and May, so everybody planted 12, 14, 16, 18 tomato plants, and each one gives up about a quarter bushel, a half bushel of tomatoes, and now they're about as common as rocks, but still, it's been a sweet, sweet, sweet summer. One of the sweet things was to see the Enquist boy, the pastor's youngest son, turned 17 here this last summer, and somehow back in the spring his skin cleared up, and he started to stand up straight, and he got a different kind of a hair color, and he started wearing contacts, and this nerd suddenly turned into a ladies' man, and here he is down at the beach on the last warm day, sitting there on a big truck inner tube, this lovely boy whose hair has now become blonder for some reason, and he's become attractive, and he's sort of enjoying this, and there's a young woman sitting on the sand beside him, and she's wearing a swimsuit that you have to look close to see it. It's rather small. Women used to be arrested for wearing a whole lot more than that. Striptease artists were wearing parkas compared to what she's got on there. But he's in love with her, or something like that. He's sitting there in the sun, and with the big toe on his left foot, he's just stroking the inside of her calf. And she's looking at him and then looking away, and he's looking at her and then looking up into the sky. Such a sweet thing to see the beginning of romance. Sweet for everybody except maybe her parents, who would be horrified. You can hear her mother say, "My gosh, darling, what are you doing? I mean, I'm all for showing some leg, some decolletage, okay, but darling, take a look at yourself in the mirror. You're showing your belly button and so much below your belly button you could sell advertising down there. I mean, at least we can see you don't have any tattoos, but darling, how can you go around in pup? Doesn't that feel odd to have a string up your crack? Doesn't that feel strange? Honey, why do you do this? We want you to go to college and have a career of some sort. We don't want you to wind up dancing on a bar and having men, you know, tuck $10 bills onto your G-string. That's not what we have in mind for you, honey." But there he is, the pastor's boy and the stripper on a summer day, and they just look so happy. He wasn't the first. That's all I can say. He wasn't the first. You feel it on these languorous summer nights. You hear the far-off squeals of young women. He was not the first. Not at all. It's been barbecue time in Lake Wobegon. They're having the last of the barbecues, you know, because the big snowstorm probably come in a week or two. So they're getting in their bratwurst and their baked beans in the backyard. The smell attracts raccoons who are fearless this summer. They just come right in as if they expect to be given a napkin. They just walk right up, and you yell at them, you tell them to go away, and they don't go away. Clarence and Arlene Bunston were having a barbecue in their backyard for his brother Clint and his wife Irene. Kind of a peacemaking barbecue, and these raccoons came in and made a pest of themselves, trying to make peace between these brothers, Clarence and Clint. They're the partners in Bunston Motors, the Ford dealership there in town, and Clint Bunsen is the chairman of the 4th of July, and it was a big 4th of July, and then he went off and he got involved with the young woman who played the Statue of Liberty in the parade. She was marching in the... It was a beautiful parade. They had Percheron horses, 8 and 16 horse hitches, and pulling big circus wagons. And they had the Whistling Mothers, a marching unit, women in gray capes, whistling in four-part harmony. You just never saw that. They had the Frisbee Dogs of Fergus Falls out there, and they had the FFA Precision Pitchfork Drill Team, which was... exciting. They had a parachute team, the Leaping Lutherans. They came down out of the sky, the Betsy Ross blanket toss. They had men dressed as Minutemen and grabbing hold of a big canvas and tossing this woman wrapped in a flag up 20 feet in the air. It was a big thing. And then the Statue of Liberty came marching down the street, and she had her sort of greenish, copperish gown on, and her seven-pointed crown, and holding her torch and the tablet there in the crook of her arm, and she was prancing around and waving the torch like it was a baton. Her gown was kind of long for her, and so she had to hold it up to keep the hem up, and then she went to scratch her nose, and she forgot. And she stepped on the hem, and she walked right up the inside of the gown, and it just tore from her body. And there she was on Main Street in front of everybody, and nothing whatsoever on her. You look close, and there was nothing. There was no London, no France. There was just nothing. She said later it's because it was so hot, but we figured, you know, she's from San Diego. That's what they do there. And... So Clint Bunsen dashes out from the curb, and he wraps his jacket around her, and he helps her to his pickup truck, and he puts her in it, and he drives her off to spare her the shame, we assume, but then they don't come back. They don't come back. And, of course, Irene was peeved, to say the least. He came back the next morning. He'd been injured. He had a big cut on his forehead. He was injured when... the mirror fell off the ceiling in room 7 of the Romeo Motel. They went to the Romeo Motel. It's on the access road on the freeway, about 25 miles from Lake Wobegon, and they were in the jacuzzi, and they were admiring themselves, and he went to open the champagne bottle, and the cork blew off the mirror, and it came down, crashing down on them. Two poor people there in the hot water, foaming and bubbling, and jagged pieces of glass, and the alarm went off, and eight firemen came through the door in the yellow canvas jackets, and when they saw what was going on, then eight more came in, and pretty soon you had 24, and these two pitiful people standing there in a wet sheet with blood stains and glass all over. Well, she got to go back to California or wherever she lives, and he had to go back to town and face the enormous silence of his wife and have a talk with Pastor Inquist, who does not want to talk about adultery, not really. And faced the anger of his brother Clarence, who said, "My gosh, people are going to the big car dealerships now. They're deserting us like rats, and you've given them one more reason, moral superiority. You must have eaten dumb flakes for breakfast." Well, they haven't spoken now for all this time, and so they're having the barbecue to kind of smooth things over, and they're not talking about it at all, because that's what people in Lake Wobegon do. They don't talk about it, and there is so much not to talk about. So they're smelling the beans and the brats, and the raccoons come in, and Clarence picks up a rock to drive them away, but it's not a rock, it's a potato, and the raccoons take that as an invitation, and so they sit up on their hind legs, and they're peeling the potato with their little delicate fingers. And Irene, Lutheran Sunday school teacher, mother of three, tomato gardener, reaches down into her big canvas sack, and she pulls out a Smith & Wesson pistol. And she takes it off safety, and she fires three shots. She doesn't hit them, but they dash round behind the garage, and they take off, and she puts it back into her canvas bag. And Clarence says, "Where did that come from?" And she says, "Oh, I've had that for a long time." And then Arlene says, "Well, let's eat." That's my town. This is the town that I come from. These people are not storytellers. These people are glad to skip over it and sweep it under. You're lucky to have me, you know, to tell these stories in some detail, because these people will never tell you. They will never, ever tell you what is going on. I don't come from people who practice any sort of narrative art whatsoever. You ask somebody, how's your brother Bob? You'll say, well, he's fine. He's not Bob anymore. He's Roberta now. Oh, I see. Oh, a she, huh? Yeah. She, oh, well, that's interesting. That's all. They don't want to go any farther. I'm too old for that. I'm interested in the truth. I'm not interested in little moral fables about, you know, about realizing our dreams and actuating the power within ourselves and making ourselves happy and the whole religion of therapy. I'm just not interested in all of those fairy tales. I'm interested in stories, the real thing. It just breaks my heart. They canceled Vacation Bible School in Lake Wobegon this summer. Women do this every year, and women are busy, I know, but Irene Bunsen was the chair. The woman with the pistol was the chair of Vacation Bible School. It was supposed to be in June, then they postponed it to August, and then they just canceled. They said, well, we won't do it this year. So our kids will not get the story of Noah and the ark and those poor people standing outside in the rain and knocking on the door. Noah, hello. Just wanted to take a look at the woodwork, you know, take a look and see here. It's really nice inside. Story of Abraham and Isaac, a weird story. A father who would have killed his son, slit his throat had the Lord told him to. But there's the story of David and Goliath, which encouraged you as a child to think that if you hit them in just the right place, they would come down. And, of course, the story of the prodigal son and Jonah and the whale and Daniel and the lion's den. We won't get these stories anymore. Our children, what are they going to do without them? I have no idea. Things are bad enough as they are, though. As you know, if you get the news in Lake Wobegon, Mr. Kruger, who was messing around with the English teacher. And how did it start? Well, he went down for teacher conferences, and his was the last conference of the day. And the conference went on past dusk, and then it adjourned to the Moonlight Bay Supper Club and Resort. And they had a couple of bombardiers, and they started telling each other their story, which was the same story. You know, they were misunderstood, they weren't loved, they weren't appreciated. And so they got into his pickup, and they parked up the gravel road just off the state highway, thinking that was okay. And they steamed up the windows there for a while. And the last thing he ever thought was that lumber truck was going to miss that turn on the state highway and go straight up the gravel road and sideswipe his truck, which is exactly what happened. And that, in fact, was the last thing he thought of just before his body was thrown out onto the gravel. She was just scratched up in mental anguish and that sort of thing. She went off somewhere, and his body was lying out there naked in the gravel, all smeared with dirt. And you could see what he'd been up to, because what you think that was, that is what that is. He wore it for safety, but it didn't work, really. So there he is. They took him down to the funeral home. I assume they took that off him. Put him in a coffin, and Pastor Tomerdahl preached a pretty fierce sermon at this funeral to this shocked, grief-stricken Kruger family. Said, this shows us once and for all that sin will not be overlooked. Your sin will find you out, he said. Whereupon his secretary burst into tears. Ran from the room, and so he had to be fired by the church board. And the secretary of the church board, a man named Eugene, voted to fire him, but thought to himself at the time, I'm so glad I burned those letters when I did. But there was one letter he could not burn. It was a letter from his lover telling him what a fantastic lover he was and how handsome and beautiful and attentive and sensitive and strong he was. He couldn't bear to lose that, and so he took it down to the library and he tucked it into a book he was sure nobody would ever read, A Statistical Abstract of American Agriculture, 1928 to 1939, the chapter on soybeans. And it stayed there for a couple of years until Grace, the librarian, was weeding out books that nobody read and opened up the statistical abstract and out fell the letter. She read it. She thought to herself, well, this cannot be my brother-in-law, Eugene, surely. And she showed the letter to her sister. And she said, surely this cannot be Eugene. And her sister looked at it. No, the person described here had nothing to do with her husband whatsoever. But when she showed him the letter, he turned purple. And so he had to be kicked out of the house and go to live with his brother, who thought to himself, boy, Eugene, what a dope. What a dope. I'm the last person they'd ever suspect. I hid my stuff pretty carefully. But of course they found it. It was in the false bottom of a drawer, his DVDs, his weird food fetish, heavyset people naked, throwing food at each other, smearing food on each other's bodies. Lentils were involved, mashed peas, baby onions, some rather vulgar parsnips. That's my town, Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. It happens in the summer. It happens on nights like this. I don't care what you do. Go do whatever you're going to do. I don't care. I don't judge you. Just tell me what it is so I can tell the story. I just want to know. That's all I want to know. The Inkvist boy, this golden boy, he just became handsome, just became attractive. Sitting on his parents' back porch, Pastor and Mrs. Inkvist, they're about to go out for the evening. And they walk over to him. He's got little wires coming out of his ears. He's listening to his own music that nobody else can hear. They say, we're going over to Uncle Jack and Aunt Josephine's. Do you want to come? What? He says, we're going over to Jack and Josephine's. Do you want to come with us? No, I don't think so, he says. That's as definite a no as we can do in Lake Wobegon. Leaves the doors open a crack, but it means no. Are you sure? They'd sure love to see you. No, I don't think so. Well, are you going out tonight? I don't know, maybe. His way of saying, none of your business. Well, are you going out? They say. Yes, of course he's going out. He's going out, if not tonight, tomorrow, next week, sometime. Of course he's going out. What he hears through those little wires is the song of a mermaid. And she's not on this shore, she's on that shore over there. She's that girl in the little swimsuit. To you, just an awkward teenager, but to him, she is a goddess. She is the source of all that is magical. And if he can just love her, she will transform his life and bring grandeur and magnificence to it. Make him someone he can barely dream of. And who can say it's not true? Who can say? That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.
The News from Lake Wobegon podcast is brought to you by Bisquick Heart Smart Pancake and Baking Mix. With 0 grams trans fat and no cholesterol, Bisquick Heart Smart Pancakes are a delicious way to be good to your heart. Bisquick, real pancakes, real good.